genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Now, today's theme is give people what they want. My first guest, Paco Underhill, has made a life's career out of studying what people want. My next guest is going to be talking about something that has clearly taken off and is something that people want as well. Facebook is the Internet's fastest growing phenomenon. If you're an American, the odds are 1 in 3 that you have a Facebook page. If you're a Canadian, the odds are 1 in 2. Facebook is a privately held company. It's valued somewhere between $10 and $20 billion. It sprang up from humble beginnings. Originally, it was called The Facebook, and it was named for student and faculty guide at Mr. Zuckerberg's prep school. It then soon morphed into a shareable site for Harvard University students. Then it grew to all Ivy League students, and the boundaries quickly expanded from there until Facebook officially launched 6 years ago. It girds the entire planet. My next guest is the official biographer of Facebook and its founder, Mark Zuckerberg. If you're curious about Facebook, or if you have any questions, you can give us a call at 639-0008, 639-0008. David Kirkpatrick is regularly ranked as one of the world's top technology journalists. He was a senior editor for Internet and Technology at Fortune magazine. He was with them for a very long time. At a meeting with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg back in September of 2006, that was the height of the company's news feed controversy, it piqued his interest that Zuckerberg seemed like such a natural CEO that immediately Mr. Kirkpatrick started following him. With extensive cooperation from the company and from Mr. Zuckerberg himself, he followed innumerable interviews with all of Facebook's leaders. He's written a book that chronicles its history at the time, and it examines the company's impact on society as well. Mr. Kirkpatrick grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, and he did a stint in Lagos, Nigeria as well. Mr. Kirkpatrick is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations as well. Welcome to the show, Mr. David Kirkpatrick. How are you?
Good to be here. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you so much for being on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. The thing that is just intriguing to me, The Economist a couple weeks ago ran an article and a great graphic inside the magazine where it said that if Facebook was a country, it had just passed 500 million people. It would be the third largest country on Earth, behind China with 1.5 billion and with India with 1.2 billion and slightly ahead of the United States. What's the success behind Facebook's unprecedented growth?
Well, I guess the simple answer to that would be it provides something that people really want. And if it wasn't something that people enjoyed doing, it would not have aggregated 500 million users in 6 short years. I mean, the many aspects of what it does that cause them to want it, that takes a little longer to answer. But, you know, one of the things that makes it very different from anything else that preceded it is that it uses genuine identity, meaning people use their real names on Facebook, which until Facebook came along, they basically never did on the Internet at all. Even in their email address, many people didn't do it before Facebook came along. I would say that's one key factor. Another really important factor is what I call bringing automation to communication. So Facebook is a way to communicate that does not require you to send a message to another person, and that is actually quite revolutionary. So you say you're my friend, I say I'm your friend, and then effectively we have each subscribed to information about one another on Facebook. Then you just do something, and I see it. And the system may decide that I'm more or less interested in certain things you do, and its algorithmic tools send that information around. It's extremely sophisticated that way, much more than most people realize when they're using it. And that, too, is a breakthrough. Then the third fundamental piece of that, I think, is what I call empowerment, which is, you know, Facebook, even though we join it in order to sort of agree to meet later at the mall, literally, In fact, once we're using Facebook, we have control of what is effectively a broadcast platform. And that gives each individual on Facebook an extraordinary amount of communications power. And that allows for some amazing things to happen, both among our friend groups and sometimes in larger realms. I think those are some of the main reasons it's become so popular.
Oh, those are three great points. We're talking to David Kirkpatrick, everybody, who's the author of The Facebook Effect. I agree with you. Now, when it passed, when Facebook passed 500 million people, though, that was set off alarm bells in my mind. And here's why. About 10 years ago, there was this question floating around about who had more power in the country of China, the U.S. government or Microsoft, because Microsoft had an R&D facility there that employed hundreds of Chinese. In fact, a lot of non-governmental organizations wield enormous power in the world, cross borders like that. Facebook, unlike some of these other NGOs, really seems aware of the power that they yield. And some of the actions that Facebook management has taken over the years has shown that they're very responsible about that. Give us a couple of examples of how Facebook takes very seriously their size and the impact that they're having on the world.
Well, that's a really interesting set of issues. I mean, the first thing I would say is that, you know, Facebook is just a platform. Really, it's just a bunch of software. There's no content there except content that's created by its members. And Facebook is very committed institutionally for that to remain the case. So really, you really, I think, can properly think of it as a communications tool. And then the question comes, you know, well, given that telecommunications tends to be a highly regulated activity and industry, how much should Facebook be regulated, and should that regulation be regulation that it applies to itself? And I think thus far the company's fervent hope is that it will be able to regulate itself, and it is doing so in a number of ways. One, I think, you know, you may want to clarify the question a little further for me to give you exactly what you're looking for, but if you think about what Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, really wants his service to do, he wants it to be that platform of empowerment that I mentioned before. And he works very hard to keep giving it that quality and those capabilities. And he believes very, very much that the members ought to be able to do what they want to do, even though, ironically, he has been accused on numerous occasions of sort of way too authoritatively changing their privacy controls in ways that the members, in some cases, didn't like. But the problem arises because when you have 500 million people doing anything, you have a vast array of different opinions and attitudes about how things ought to occur, and especially when it's literally happening in every country on the planet, the cultural attitudes that differ dramatically from country to country can really come into play there.
Oh, an interesting observation. We're talking to David Kirkpatrick, everybody, the biographer of Facebook. And one of the interesting things is how you began writing this book, how you jumped into it, David. You were intrigued by Mark Zuckerberg when you first met him. You coined him as a natural CEO. What made you think that he was a natural at this, and what piqued your interest?
Well, it was interesting because when I first met Mark Zuckerberg in September of 2006, I had been a technology journalist for, I don't know, 15 years or so. And, you know, I was very well acquainted with Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and Andy Grove and Larry Ellison and all those kind of guys. And, you know, I typically did frequently meet with startup CEOs, and that was a pretty gratifying thing, and they often were impressive. But I remember when I met with Zuckerberg, it was a completely different kind of experience than I was generally used to, because first of all, he walked up to the table in the restaurant where we were meeting, and he looked like he could be my grandson. He was so young. At the time, he was 22.
Right.
But second of all, you know, the words he uttered when he started speaking were not the words of a ordinary sort of ambitious young CEO. They were the words of a visionary who was not doing it to make money. He was doing it to change the world. And, I mean, it sounds cliched in a way, but you know, having talked a lot to Bill Gates over the years and studied the history of Microsoft, I was extremely aware of the fact that Microsoft, too, was created not in order to get Bill Gates to become the richest man on the planet, even though he succeeded in doing that. It was started to put a computer on every desk and in every home with a very, very fervently held vision of changing the world through, again, empowerment. And it was weird to me, the echoes that I heard in Zuckerberg from my acquaintance with Gates, even down to the fact that they both dropped out of Harvard in their sophomore year. That was kind of bizarre also. So the guy think in the biggest possible terms. And I'll give you an updating on that. I mean, even today, with Facebook at 500 million users, Mark Zuckerberg is not impressed with that. He looks at a planet approaching 7 billion in population, and that's the market that he aspires to. He thinks Facebook could and should be used by everyone on the planet, and he really thinks the world would be a better place if it were. And he's not going to rest until he gives that his best shot.
Wow, that is incredible, and that is great ambition. We're talking to David Kirkpatrick, everybody. I have to ask you, you've studied this, and you've studied many, many other startup technology companies, but what kept Facebook from being bought out or absorbed by another company or just wiped out of existence altogether?
Well, the answer to that is very simple and very much the same thing we were talking about just a second ago, Mark Zuckerberg. He has absolute control of the company in a way that's highly unusual because even though he only owns 24% of the stock, he controls 3 out of the 5 seats on the board of directors, which basically means no decision is made without his concurrence. And he doesn't want to sell. It's as simple as that. Even today, with a lot of pressure for it to go public, he's fairly reluctant to do that, although I think he will be pushed into it within the next 2 years or so. But the company has faced repeated offers to purchase it from Viacom, from Yahoo, from Microsoft, and others, and he consistently has simply shown no interest. And the most extraordinary example of that, which always must be mentioned, is that in the fall of 2007, when Mark Zuckerberg was 23 years old, and I tell this story in some detail in the book, Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer came to him and offered to buy the company outright for $15 billion.
Wow.
He was 23. He would have made $5 billion personally in that sale, and he didn't even consider accepting it. I think that's an extraordinary thing that simply is not repeated in any other instance I have ever heard of.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And throughout your book, David Kirkpatrick, The Facebook Effect, it is clear that Mark Zuckerberg is the driver. He's the engineer on the train, however you want to phrase that. He is the one that keeps it all together. He has an inner circle of close advisors as well, Mark Andreessen of LoudCloud, Steve Jobs of Apple Computer, of course. The thing is that always worries me when you have so much of a company wrapped up in an individual like that is what happens if that individual gets sick, hurt, or injured?
I think that's a very important question in this company's case because he has been so much single-handedly the driving force behind its success. And because it so much completely reflects his views, his ethos, his ideology. And I honestly would criticize him somewhat, I think, for not having, at least up to now, done a good enough job building in a sort of fallback option, in case of something does happen to him. If he's hit by a bus, Facebook does have a lot of very impressive leaders. But I think it would be very much at sea without him. And I think it's also especially important to think about that in light of the fact that Facebook controls this vast trove of data about all of us, which we have willingly deposited there. And, you know, even if we do decide, which I've decided, but everyone has to decide for themselves, that they trust Facebook in its current form, and we basically are convinced that Mark Zuckerberg's leadership is more or less guarding our data to the degree we want it to be guarded, which, of course, is a controversial question in itself.
Yes, it is.
But even if you accept that, then what happens if Microsoft did somehow get hold of it down the road? Or what if Mark is, you know, knocked off or whatever? And there were actually death threats against him in Pakistan because of some things that happened with a Facebook page not long ago. So I don't think that he's going to get killed by some Pakistani, by the way. But the
That's
point
a relief.
Is that, you know, it's a legitimate question. The answer is just not known. And one of the ways I respond to all those uncertainties and that I recommend everyone does is I think you have to be extremely cautious about what data about yourself you do put on Facebook and recognize that no matter whether Facebook offers more protections than any other service or not, once it's in digital form on the internet, that information could escape your control and become disclosed. So don't put information up there that you would not be comfortable seeing on the front page of the newspaper, because it could get out.
I agree with you. We're talking to David Kirkpatrick, everybody, the author of The Facebook Effect. The way I always phrase that with my children and my grandchildren is, don't put anything up there that you wouldn't want your mom to see, and that's the best
that's
way to
exactly
do it.
Exactly the same thing. Yeah.
We got to take a short break here, David. When we come back, though, I want to tease the audience and talk about the tipping point when it comes to Facebook. So hold off for that. We've got to take a short break, and we'll answer that when we come right back.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What? Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday, here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Our theme today is Give People What They Want. And I'm talking to David Kirkpatrick, who has written the definitive book on Facebook. It's titled The Facebook Effect. And it really is a biography of not only the company, but its founder as well, Mark Zuckerberg. I'll get it right one of these times. Before we went to the commercial break, I teased you with the idea of the tipping point. And no doubt, David, you've read Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point. What was the tipping point for Facebook that sort of threw it over the edge?
Well, I'd say there were really maybe three separate incidents that added up to being a definitive and authoritative tipping point. But they started right around the time when I met Zuckerberg in September of 06, when there were only 9 million members. I took it to today with 500 million. The first one was the newsfeed, which was very controversial, but changed the service in many, many ways and has become the central feature. That was launched in early September 06. Then at the end of September of 06, they opened Facebook up to all adults, not just students at high schools and colleges. That was a major change. And then the third piece, which was really equally important, I think. Well, actually, there may be one other one. The third one, though, is when they turned Facebook into a platform for the applications of other companies, which happened in May of 2007. That was a major breakthrough because basically they acknowledged no way be able to produce all the features that their members wanted, so they opened it up for anybody to build features inside Facebook. And as anybody now knows, there's hundreds of thousands of applications that work inside Facebook, and now the platform has even extended out onto the open internet, and your website or mine could have a like button or a Facebook Connect implementation, and we could have data that our readers do or followers or whatever do on any page flowing back into their Facebook newsfeed to their friends. So then the fourth one, though, I think, which is really maybe in some ways from a sheer growth perspective, the single most important one, was the translation application. Facebook is now in, you know, like I said, every country on the planet, and it's in something like 80 languages. But the interesting thing is they did not translate it themselves. What they did was they built an application that allowed the users who spoke each given language to do that translation on their own, and then to vote among themselves on what were the best words to represent.
Hello, David, are you there? Hello, David. I think we may have lost you there, David. Give us a call back. If you can hear the sound of my voice, give us a call back, and we'll pick up the conversation with David Kirkpatrick. He's the author of the book, The Facebook Effect, and it is the definitive story about Facebook, the growth of the company, and, of course, the founder, Mark Zuckerberg. And in the book, it's a fantastic read because it really chronicles how Facebook got to be 500 million users. And just to put that into perspective in human terms, if Facebook, the community of Facebook, was a country, it would be the third largest country in the world, behind only China with 1.5 billion people, India with 1.2 billion people, and slightly ahead of the United States with just slightly over 300 million people here in the United States. The social responsibilities that a company like Facebook faces are just incredible and staggering, and we'll get into some of those when we get Mark Zuckerberg back on the line. But he was really talking about the four tipping points that created Facebook as we know it today. They began back in 2006. The first tipping point was the news feed, which I use regularly on Facebook. That became a central feature back in 2006. And then another tipping point was the opening up of Facebook to adults, which also happened back in 2006. And then we enumerated the platform application features opened up, and finally the translation features as well. David, welcome back. Are you there?
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. That's the modern technology at work. It's good and it's bad.
AT&T in particular, right. Go ahead.
Ooh. They'll just call out AT&T right there. So I loved your 4 points about the tipping points, and that was great. I was just recapping those when you came back on the line. Now, I want to ask you, you know, again, on the thought of the tipping point for Facebook, what impact did the battle between Google and Microsoft for dominance of the internet, what effect did that battle have on Facebook's success?
Well, for one thing, it's one reason why Steve Ballmer felt he had to offer $15 billion to Zuckerberg to even get in the door in 07, but because Google at the time was also very interested in acquiring or investing in Facebook. The two of those companies have been, you know, seesawing for a long time, although Google's clearly in the ascendancy there because search has become so important and Microsoft is a relatively small player in that arena. Mm. But certainly the fact that I think both companies see Facebook as representing something they need for the long term. You know, first of all, you got to remember, Facebook is by far the overwhelming place on the internet worldwide where people are spending their time. Google still has more unique users worldwide, but something like four times as much time is spent on Facebook as on Google today. So, you know, also, you know, both these companies want to dominate search, and what's widely believed is that what's called social search is going to be a key part of the future of search. In other words, not only will you find a site on the internet based on what you're looking for according to what links point to it, which is Google's primary tool,
right,
but you will probably also be directed based on the activities of your friends in the past. What have your friends liked? What have they visited? What have they recommended? And that is really in its infancy, but everyone, including myself, really believes that will be a key part of how the internet works going forward. And Facebook, well above anyone else, has that data. So everybody wants to get in bed with these guys. Microsoft, interestingly, is. Microsoft has this deal with Facebook to do search inside Facebook, and it could, in the end, become Microsoft's best tool to combat Google.
Very interesting, and I did not know that they were in bed with, Microsoft was in bed with Facebook on
that. Yeah, Microsoft owns like 1.3% of Facebook. When they tried to buy it outright, they failed, but they made an investment and they did an ad deal, which has now morphed into a search deal.
I see. All right, good. Now, I want to ask you about historical, going back to the earlier days of Facebook, and the book makes it clear that Facebook owes considerable gratitude to other networks, things like ConnectU and House System, as well as MySpace and Google. How did this coopetition, that's the combination of cooperation and competition, how did the coopetition shape Facebook as we know it today?
Well, there were plenty of predecessor systems. The most noteworthy ones were Friendster and MySpace. But even going back to 1997, there was a very important, ultimately unsuccessful service launched in New York called SixDegrees.com, which had a lot of features in common with Facebook. What you were also referring to was that on the campus at Harvard, there were other students developing services of various sorts that, after Facebook took off, led their founders of these other services to accuse Zuckerberg of having stolen some of their ideas. And some of those themes will emerge in this movie that's coming out in October called The Social Network, which is going to be a very entertaining movie, but not a very accurate portrayal of Facebook. It will be highly dramatic and interesting, though.
Okay, we'll look for that. That's coming out in October, The Social Network movie?
Yeah, starring Justin Timberlake playing Sean Parker, one of Mark Zuckerberg's early partners, and Jesse Eisenberg playing Mark Zuckerberg. But the point is that, you know, Facebook did have a complicated beginnings, and Zuckerberg was a very young guy who made some mistakes and I think probably did treat people, you know, a little bit at the least rudely, and he may have, you know, been somewhat unethical in a few things he did, although frankly I think the accusations of stealing are exaggerated because everybody was stealing their ideas from Friendster at that time, including the Winklevoss brothers and Divya Narendra, who are the most famously accusative of the crew, and they're big features in the movie.
I see. Well, you've alluded to this a little bit, but I want you to expand on this next subject, and that is, what does the future hold for Facebook?
Well, Facebook has a lot of interesting opportunities going down the road. For one thing, I think it's going to be a hugely profitable, very, very a big company down the road. That's an obvious thing. But from a structural point of view, I think the way they're going to get there is over time to move away from Facebook.com and move towards this platform piece that I talked about earlier, so that the part of Facebook that does extend across the internet will become more and more all of Facebook. It will sort of sink below the surface and be a place where you maintain your profile, where you identify the connections with your friends, and your newsfeed will be maintained there, but it might not even be consumed there. So you'll be on the website of your radio program or my book or whatever, and you will just do the normal activities you do on the internet, and those sites will all have a connection to Facebook so that the social activity you do there will be conveyed back to your friends through that hub that Facebook represents. I think that's where they see their future lying, and I think they believe that there's going to be an extremely big opportunity to distribute advertising to people as they traverse the internet, because Facebook is going to know so much about them that it can give them ads that are really useful and pertinent to whatever it is they're doing.
Wow. We're talking to David Kirkpatrick, everybody. He's the author of the book, The Facebook Effect. It is the definitive biography of Facebook and its founder, Mark Zuckerberg. Now, you are a technology buff in and of yourself, and outside of writing the book, you also just recently put on a seminar or a conference called Techonomy. Tell us about that. It was up in Lake Tahoe.
Big success just last Wednesday through Friday at Lake Tahoe was our first conference for our new company, which we've just formed. And at the conference were Bill Gates, Eric Schmidt, Bill Joy, Jeff Bezos of Amazon, John Doerr, Stuart Brand, you know, an extraordinary cast of characters in the technology realm and elsewhere. We also had people from Chevron, Spitty, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, because we really believe that the whole idea is to talk about the way that technology is integrated in everything else in modern life, and the technology innovation is key for progress in all things, particularly progress for the human race as we face these big problems.
Oh, I love it, David Kirkpatrick. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here, and I'm going to ask you to look at the pantheon of great industrialists that the United States has produced, the Henry Fords, the J.D. Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, and so forth. And where would you place Mark Zuckerberg in that pantheon of industrialists? David, are you there? Oh, we lost David at the end there. Well, that's unfortunate. We may not have enough time to get him back, but we've been talking to David Kirkpatrick. He is the author of the book, The Facebook Effect. If you have any interest in technology, this is the book that you want to pick up. He is extraordinarily knowledgeable in all things technology, including the mobile phone, and now you're back. Hello, David. Are you back?
Yep. Sorry about that. That was mobile phones. Sorry about that.
That's quite all right. I was asking you, looking at the pantheon of industrialists that this country has produced, the Henry Fords, the J.D. Rockefellers, and so forth, where would you place Mark Zuckerberg in that pantheon of industrialists?
Well, I think it's early to say, but he is clearly one of the most successful entrepreneurs in history in any country. So I think it's premature to put him up there with Thomas Edison or Alexander Graham Bell, but I think he's heading towards that kind of a position if he keeps this thing growing. I mean, there are a lot of predictions it's going to hit a billion next year. I mean, I think in my book I really describe a lot of the factors that are kind of converging to keep it growing. It is probably, I believe, one of the reasons I wrote the book. I think this is one of the most important elements in the modern landscape in which we live, electronic or otherwise. And that you have to understand it to understand where the world's going, and he's doing it.
I agree with you. David Kirkpatrick, author of the book, The Facebook Effect, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thanks, Bill.
We'll talk to you later. That brings us to the end of another show. You've been listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Join us every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Coming up next is Living Your Inspired Life with Susan Burrell. I'll talk to you tomorrow.